From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us as we head into the summer. Could be 110, could be 90, could be 75. Who knows? The one thing we do know is it's probably not going to rain for a while. So even though we've been praying for rain, appreciate you all being with us here on the Bishop's Hour. And this is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. And we're glad to have Jane Lee sitting across the table.
It's good
no
to
mask,
be here.
Nothing. We're just, things are sort of back to normal.
They are. Rejoicing to be back to normal.
Yeah.
We are very aware to be taking it, joy where we can, seeing it and grabbing it and passing it on.
Yeah.
That's one of the great things that's come out of the last couple of years. We are very aware of joy.
It's been an interesting couple of years. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I guess we're looking back on it. We don't know. I mean, there are still, it's still out there, and there is some concerns about the fall, and there's also concerns about all of us letting our guard down, et cetera.
Right.
So, someday I think we'll look back on it and go, well, it was a learning experience.
It was. There's always a mix.
I can imagine. I mean, people that my mom and dad lived through the Great Depression, and had completely different impressions of it.
Did they?
Yeah, you know, and you, when you hear that, I mean, when you don't live it, but you just hear it in school, the Great Depression, the Dark Ages, the all these terms that we give to things, you was God around? Was, you know, were people going to church during the Depression, or were they all just depressed? You know what I mean?
Right.
And my mom lived on a farm in North Dakota, and she said, you know, other than I think there was a lot of crop failure, you know, the Dust Bowl, it kind of started in North Dakota and went down that whole all the way to Texas. But she said, you know, we had chickens and cows, and so we always had eggs and milk and meat. And she says, we never starved. And we just, I mean, it was back before families had to pack up the van and go on vacation across the country, or it was back before only real rich people got on an airplane
That's
and went
true.
Anywhere.
Yes, it was not affordable.
It wasn't, it just wasn't, you didn't measure your success by how big your house was or where you went to, if you went to Paris on vacation or what kind of car you were driving. You just were happy to have enough to eat. And have parents that loved you and siblings that loved you, and there was a school down the road, and she said, I never, things weren't much different before the Depression or after the Depression. You know, we lived on a farm and we had enough to eat, but so, and yet my dad lived in a big city, and a completely different experience. Actually went to college during the Great Depression.
Oh my!
You know, which, I mean, colleges were open. You know, you can. I'm not aware of any colleges that closed during the Great Depression and had sort of a normal college life, although he came from a lower middle class family, probably the best way to describe it, and was pretty much the first one in his family to go to college. So, you know, God's always there. And you know, I think we'll look back on this and realize it was learning, and it was different for everybody. Some people never got sick. Other people got very sick. Some people died. A lot of people died.
Right. And it's across the spectrum. I know a family that knows of lost five friends and others that didn't lose any. And
I know people that have what they call long COVID.
Right.
And it's like a whole laundry list of symptoms.
Right. And doesn't it in a way, and I say it really delicately because there is no broad brush that fits for everything.
No.
But God did say he'll bring good out of anything. And when we turn back to him with this, maybe he'll help us through it. But I wonder, when you're talking about your parents, and so you're getting firsthand accounts of the Depression, did they tell you stories that then helped you as you helped your children navigate what we didn't know what was going to happen 2.5 years ago, where it was going to go, except that it was very intense?
Yeah, I think it did. And we've always sort of emphasized that you know, we all love each other, and we're all in the same house. And it's a relatively small house for a lot of kids, mm-hmm. but not really. I mean, I was in a small house growing up, you know, mm-hmm. shared like a dorm room type room, uh-huh. bedroom with my brother for 18 years, you know, and my sisters had three people in a room, you know, I mean, uh-huh. it's just sort of just what it was,
right.
you know, it wasn't, oh, this is really hard. I don't have my own room.
Right.
You know,
right.
Just the way things are.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't extra, but mm-hmm. we always, mom and dad always sure we had enough,
mm-hmm.
you know, and when you hear, we have, you know, people on from the food bank and other mm-hmm. Loaves and Fishes. And when you hear people, they talk about food insecurity, to mm-hmm. imagine a kid going to bed, we weren't eating prime rib, but there was enough for a second helping of macaroni and cheese.
Right.
You weren't
now,
going
did your
to,
dad, being in the city, did he, it doesn't sound like he had to deal with food insecurity, although they didn't have the word at that time, the phrase, but did he know of people that had food insecurity to cope with?
Absolutely. I mean, he would show us pictures from the time, and you would see what they're called soup lines.
Mm-hmm.
These long, long lines. And two things stood out to me from the soup lines. It was always men.
Hmm.
There weren't women and children that I... The pictures that Great Depression...
Thinking about it,
lines.
That is the that is
yeah.
what
and
I saw, too,
I don't know
too,
if
the
they
books.
Were going in and eating or if mm-hmm. they were picking something up.
Mm-hmm.
And the second thing I noticed is they all wore hats.
Mm-hmm.
All of them. Every man wore a hat.
Yes.
Almost an identical hat.
Right.
I think the hat people were doing pretty well during the Depression. They were the ones mm-hmm. living up on the hill in the fancy house.
Do you think those experiences formed your parents as resiliency
definitely.
And strength?
Very, very definitely. And the other thing I noticed, until the day she died, my mom felt like she's cooking for an army. I mean, she always overcooked.
Mm-hmm.
And just because... I'm sure the recipes in her mind from when she was maybe a teenage girl mm-hmm. and helping her mom, there were 17 kids. Everybody was pitching in.
17 children in the family?
Yeah.
Wow.
She's used to lots of pots on the stove.
And they made it, didn't they?
They made it.
It's so present in our mind right now that, oh, they can't be born into poverty. We don't want that. Not to derail. But 17 children, and they made it work.
They made it work.
Through all that difficulty.
Yeah.
That's a beautiful story.
Yeah. And so she was used to seeing a lot of food being prepared.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing that we always kind of made fun of mom on was she would refer to supper was at noontime.
Oh.
Her brothers and her dad would come in from the... Mm-hmm. This is back in the days when farmers actually farmed.
Mm-hmm.
Now we have a lot of owners
mm-hmm.
and a lot of hired hands.
Okay.
You know,
not family farms.
Migrant workers, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We still have family farms, but we have a lot of the big agribusiness. You know, these are sort of what you would call dirt farmers in North Dakota. They got mm-hmm. their 20 acres or whatever... or 168, whatever it was from the government, the homesteading.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's how they populated places like North Dakota,
mm-hmm.
where nobody wanted to go. German immigrants.
Mm-hmm.
Her parents were both born in the old country. So she was first generation.
Mm-hmm.
And you when you think about the food prep and all that,
mm-hmm.
you're doing it for a lot of people. You know?
You are. Wow.
So, but she would always cook too much, and we mm-hmm. had leftovers before Tupperware was invented. So there. Were
And I imagine that faith had to be a strong part of their lives.
Huge part.
Had to be.
Absolute huge part. My mom grew up Lutheran,
mm-hmm.
which was state law in North Dakota, almost.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
And converted to Catholicism. She went to a Catholic nursing school in Bismarck, North Dakota. St. Alexis was the hospital, and it was part of the University of Mary.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, and then it was run by the nuns. And I'm not sure the name of the group of nuns, but it was run by them. It's still there. And she said, as a young woman, she said, these nuns had something. that I went. She said they never tried to convert me. They never, mm-hmm. you didn't have to be Catholic to go to the nursing school. But she said they had something, a joy to them, a bigger picture, a different, and she converted. Before she met my dad,
it's that live the gospel without words.
The Saint Francis.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's amazing.
And there's nothing like living with a convert.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
They make sure you get out of bed and go to Mass or go to catechism class
on
Saturday mornings.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
I can remember we didn't have a Catholic school. Our town was very small. When we was 3,000 people, we moved there, and so we would go. Before they had the word CCD and things like mm-hmm. that, it was catechism, catechism class on Saturday mornings at the little church, 9 a.m., mm-hmm. and you'd have Mass, you'd have confession, and you had, like, study, like, mm-hmm. for about an hour, you know, lessons, you know, for the Baltimore Catechism and why did God make me, God uh-huh. loves me, you know, and I found it in a dresser drawer one day, the other day, a few years ago. And so we had to go to catechism. All our friends were Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're watching right. cartoons on TV or, you know. Mm-hmm. And so we were a bit resistant. And it would be 8:15. And Mom worked nights as a nurse, uh-huh. you know. And so, because Dad was in grad school, was in undergrad first and then in grad school with five kids. And mm-hmm. I think, Mom's not going to wake up. She's not going to wake up. can't go to catechism class without breakfast. Somebody has to drive it. Well, we always rode our bikes, but uh-huh. you know, and it's like, and you're kind of praying. Who am I praying to here? Dear God, let our mother have her sleep.
That's right.
Let her sleep in.
Shrouding it in consideration and kindness.
Yes.
Yes.
And like you could fool God.
Right,
and,
right.
And Mom would always make sure we went to catechism and went to. Dad was very faithful too, though. He was not an absentee dad in terms of you guys go to Mass and I'll watch the 49er game or whatever, mm-hmm. you know. No, he was very faithful.
Dads have a huge impact on
Absolutely.
The continual faith life. In fact, I just heard, I think it was 85% chance of predictability if dad is practicing the faith, mm-hmm. the children will continue it as adults.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And it all just fits perfectly in the ministry that the Lord has guided me to create is God's heart and hands. How parents are the God's heart are God's heart and hands. We stand between God and our children, and we yeah. form their faith. And by doing it silently, and how your mom lived it, and how she was on fire with her faith, and your dad backed it up just by being and doing what he was, and that's huge. And I'm finding as we move through these times, one of the things that we're kind of being drawn back to, I think the Lord is using this time to usher us back slowly into that parents, reminding parents that that's where the real influence lies, is, as one parent said to me, getting your children to heaven.
Yeah, and, you know, I tell people if you want to change the world, it starts at home.
Mother Teresa heard you, and she took that on and said that.
World peace. Really?
Yeah, she did. Yeah. She did. So I think she's a little plagiarism there. But
yeah, well, I'll forgive her.
Yeah. Yeah. But she did. Peace begins in the home. You want to change the world, change the family. You're
yeah,
absolutely
I mean,
right.
You see so many, I don't know, famous, accomplished people who have sort of abandoned their family, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
They're absentee quite a bit. And not all people. Not all, but and people say, well, I'm out doing important work, you know,
right.
and you are, but the most important work is always going to be at home.
The most influential, yeah. work. I had the gift of my car breaking down right next to a cemetery. So what, the 45 minutes till AAA got there, I was walking around. It's shaded. It was nice. It was breezy. And when else would you take the time to read headstones?
I know.
And without exception, beloved dad, beloved mom, beloved grandpa, grandma. There was no CEO, no resume, no, you know, anything you can imagine that we all do, that we all preoccupy ourselves yeah. with. It just wasn't there.
Right.
And I think that's something that the parents are being called back to, that we're getting away, or God wants us to get away from worrying about everything else in the world that we do. I had a discussion with a parent. Her child had just gotten out of sixth grade. Actually, my son, they were in sixth grade together. Our boys were. Are you going to have your son do algebra over the summer? and being an engineer and having had responsibility for their education for years before as homeschooling, I kind of panicked. Oh my gosh, should I be doing this? I'm not so sure. What should I do? And so I asked her more questions to understand it, because I'd never entertained that idea to have him do another math course over the summer, because I looked at summer as a time to really let the Holy Spirit take control and what do they let them play and explore and have that opportunity. And as she explained it, it was she had mapped out that if her son did sixth grade algebra over sixth grade, then he could take a different math in seventh grade, then in eighth grade, then he can go into high school taking algebra 2. And then calculus when we got, and then she just rolled the next 10 years into major segments of his life out.
Yeah.
And I said, I want him to light things on fire and take things apart. I want him to explore what the Holy Spirit has programmed her to be. And she just had a blank look on her face. But I had to, in that moment, it was really interesting. I had to worry about, well, what does this parent think? What are they going to think of me? Because I have all this and I'm supposed to like make it look like I've got it all together. And I just owned it and said, and stood up for God in the moment and said, no, God has plans for him and I have to give him this opportunity and facilitate it. Yeah. And he actually did light the yard on fire. That's how we met our new neighbors. He lit their yard on fire with his rocket. They went the wrong way. But you know, it was a very small patch, and that's how we met them. But it was it was that summertime thing of really embracing and understanding that I had a responsibility, and understood that if I'm going to put them in a book and only worry about their book achievement, or if that's what God wanted them to be, because some of them are brilliant that way, but that we do have that responsibility.
Yeah, and you know, first off, you know, they say tomorrow's not planned, not promised. Number one, you know, there's enough to worry about today.
Mm-hmm.
And number two, you know, it's really, they are, I've always felt never, you know, the old never put off to tomorrow something you can do today. I perverted or changed that just a little bit to never put off a joy you could experience today. Don't put it off till tomorrow.
Oh, wow.
You know, one of your kids will say, hey, Dad, could we go for a ride in the country? You know, and like, what a wonderful offer, you know?
Yes.
Like we might see some stuff. We might, you know, and you never know, you know, and you could be busy. Oh, no, I really want to watch the news, or I want to read the newspaper, or I want to.
There's always something. There's going
always
to be.
Something,
we're human.
You know,
we're busy.
And no, we'll take a ride.
Sunday, right?
Or, you know, and after Mass on Sunday, we'll take a ride. Instead of just saying, "Yeah, let's go for a ride," half an hour, whatever.
Right.
Let's see what happens. You know, I remember coming back one time from an event, a birthday party for a famous person down in Clarksburg, and one of my daughters, who was about 9-10 years old at the time, she came with me, and it was a kind of a late afternoon, early evening, summertime, you know, so it's still light out. We're driving back from Clarksburg, and you come down that river road, and the Kirby River Road, the Sacramento River's right there, and come in to where we can get on Interstate 80 to head back, to head west to where we live. And if you go straight, you go into the city of West Sacramento. And I've been in West Sacramento many times, but I said to my daughter, I said, I'm not sure you've ever really seen West Sacramento. You know, let's just go straight and we'll just drive through West Sacramento on the way home, and we'll get onto the causeway and, you know, we'll take an extra 10 or 15 minutes. And we're driving down the streets of West Sacramento, and they're parked right on West Capitol Avenue was the Wienermobile. The Oscar Mayer, the Wienermobile.
Wow.
It was on like a world tour or something. And just the, you know, I said, we were just about to get on the freeway. And I said, let's go into it, you know.
Wow.
And there it was. So, we pull over and you know, there was nobody there. You know, it was just sitting there. And there was a little restaurant nearby. So, we'd go inside and you could see the guys with their outfits on. And we said, are you connected to the, and they said, yeah, we're driving it around the country. They were going to head towards Reno or something and then going to go across to Salt Lake City. And they said, we'll be through with dinner if you want a little tour of it.
Wow.
And they came out and they let my daughter go. You know, it was like a limo.
It was about as big as a limo.
Or maybe even a little bit longer. And it's got the hot dog.
Right. Did it have windows?
Yeah, it had windows, like little portholes, almost like in a airplane or something, you know. And it was just, and I always use that as an example of just take the road not traveled.
Right. And see what the Lord has. Yeah. And was it the Holy Spirit prompting you to do that? And I think that's one of the other blessings that's come out of all this is we saturate ourselves in those times of quiet, the joy. I see that in parents is because the kids, we all got used to the routine of school, homework, sports, and the days were filled and Sundays were filled even. And kids were like, wow, I like this slower pace. And so it's been a transition to go back. And some families are getting back on the merry-go-round and some are not, or they're doing it very carefully because it happened so gradually. And then when they were pulled off of it. And so was it the Holy Spirit guiding you to do that? But I think there's something to be said when one of the flowers, if you will, that come out of the fertilizer of the difficulty is looking for those moments, paying attention and seeing them in a different way.
Yeah.
And I have to say that as time goes on, and we're not through the thick of it, that's for sure. But, we can say we have to just turn back to God and put God. And yes, that's very true. And that's one of the ways that I would offer that we do it, is by being slowed down and hearing how the Holy Spirit can speak through many voices in our right. life. And children are a classic, right? Out of the mouths of babes.
Right.
And who knows with the relationship and what prospered later because you did that with your child at that age, and they know that they can turn to you. And then when they have to start talking about things and navigating life that's difficult, you made yourself available for the spontaneity of it, of their lives coming in and meshing with your lives. And that's how I really do see us as God's heart and hands, is we are those first models.
Yeah.
Of what God's going, is he going to be responsive? Is he judgmental? Because we can read about it. We can be well catechized, but it's the people around us.
Yeah.
And that's really important. And so really thinking about it, saints, as we read the history of the church, there's lots of saints in different eras but we've got to have saints right now in this country, wouldn't you think?
Yeah.
They're somewhere. And where? And then, but parents aren't, we're not talking about it very much. And so I think it's important to think they're made that way. God has it designed for them to be. And I think busyness, just those expectations of why we signed on for that kind of busyness, I would offer that it's one of the distractions that really, I wonder if we're missing some saints. Because we've just, well, we need to, you know, you need to have that education so you can buy the house, you can have economic security. It's the same thing that women were told, that I was told in engineering. You needed to keep having a professional income, even when you had children, to secure your family's future, financial future. When women have always worked, and it's just that perspective of the who comes first, the family or the achievement. And I would offer that parenthood, I think, is one of the hardest, probably the hardest path. Faith journey, wouldn't you think?
Easily. And you know, it's, you know, I've had jobs and coworkers and everything else, and you have good days and average days and not really bad days, but you in many jobs you do have a lot of bad days. But never anything I took home in my heart. Whereas, you know, a kid comes home from school and something happened and made them sad or hurt them or made them ecstatic. And, you know, and you're just on that same roller coaster with them. I mean, it's way different than if the boss said something to you or, you know, or something happened at work, either good or bad.
Mm-hmm.
In the family, it's everything.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a child that's suffering for some reason, it consumes you every minute.
It does. It becomes, you bear it. Your heart is now outside of, as a mother told me when mine were just babies, your heart is now outside your chest.
Yeah.
Because your heart is walking around and is very tender and can be affected.
Whether it's a medical problem or an emotional problem or a friendship problem, you know, I mean, you can't control all that, you know, as they get old, and it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how old they don't grow up and go, they may move away, but they're still your kids.
Right.
They're still, you know, picking up the phone and
They are. That's what's really interesting. There isn't a natural break that happens where they go off. And I really, it's given me some insight to how I think God aches for us and the love of why he sent his son to suffer for us. That love, how we would suffer for our children, right?
Yeah.
I remember my mom saying that her mother said to her, I wish I could take your pain.
Yeah.
And we would. And it gives us insight. And I think that parenthood most closely models God's love for us.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of my favorite stories from the Bible is the prodigal son.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that how overjoyed, I mean, the father was, which in my mind, that's the father.
Mm-hmm. God the father.
God the father. Yes. Welcoming his son back with tears in his eyes, going out to look out.
And he was looking over, for him looking after for a very him. Extended period of time.
Right. You know, never gave up on him and was completely overjoyed to have him back,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's, to me, that's the whole message in a nutshell.
Mm-hmm.
And was going to celebrate. He wasn't going to scold his son. He was going to celebrate
mm-hmm.
his son coming back.
That parable really gives us insight, if you will, a window inside of how all heaven rejoices over one sinner that turns back.
Yeah, the 99 sheep that are fine
yes.
and the one that's lost. Yeah.
Right, right. And so then as parents, I think what I'm hoping, and I think we do need to pay attention, and when we have a child that may be showing signs of being devoted to the Lord. I mean, something like Padre Pio, when he was quite young, those signs were there. But he could have been, I don't know, actually I wouldn't say that he could have been turned away from because he was very strong in his yeah. experience. But for those that it comes on later as a vocation or those that aren't quite sure, the family has a strong influence. And I would offer, too, that the extended family and the neighbors and so on, with knowing a lot of high school graduates right now and heading to college, I'm really cautious to say, well, what are you going to do? Well, what do you want to do?
Mm-hmm.
Because we have to make room for the Holy Spirit to move in them as they go through in college and finding out what God intends for them, not just doing to some external criteria.
Yeah, and you know, whether it's a vocation of the priesthood or the religious life or the diaconate or the vocation of being married, parents need to be there to encourage their kids to be open to it.
Mm-hmm.
If your son or daughter, well, son, and if the case of the priesthood comes home and says, you know, I'm considering being a priest, and you go, oh,
right,
really, you know,
right, yes, that tone
versus,
that says a lot,
yeah, versus. Wow. Well, let's talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a big difference. It's funny, Bishop Soto was, I was at the Vocations Benefit Dinner the other night at Good Shepherd in Elk Grove, and pleased to say that it was a sold out. It's 325 people.
Yay.
I've been to all of them, but this one was the biggest
wow.
by far, and which was really, really encouraging. You know, the seminarians were there and altar servers were there, but Bishop Soto was telling a story about how, because he just had his 40th anniversary as a priest, of his ordination mm-hmm. as a priest, and he was telling a story about how he really, you know, started very young thinking about being mm-hmm. a priest, and then he says, and he was laughing, he says, and then my parents would introduce me, you know, like, I don't know, when he's in high school or
uh-huh.
something, and say, and this is Jaime, he's going to become a priest.
Wow.
And they were very proud, but it
yes.
also, he's saying, I guess I better be a priest.
See, it influenced him.
Yeah, yeah.
It did. That is, and Ephesians 2:10, for we are his handiwork, created in Christ Jesus for the good works that God has prepared in advance, that we should live in them. And especially now with so much going on, every person is created with a purpose and a place and a part of the solution to help humanity. And besides the obvious pro-life message that's the subtitle there, but in reminding our youth that God created them for something. And especially in the last couple of years, I think they've lost traction with that because I'm as a private math tutor and I'm working with a lot of kids trying to help them come out of the gap of the lockdown and so on and online learning and trying to help them get that knowledge back and get going again
right.
On the acquiring the skills, just not having the grade.
Right.
Because they got the grade, but a lot of them didn't get the skill that they need, the skills that they need. But then to also say there's a purpose. God has a purpose for you. And don't worry about this interruption, because you can go back and mm-hmm. get what you need. But then to understand, to say you have a purpose, and you think I was telling them that they had green hair and they didn't mm-hmm. know it. It's amazing. And that's another thing about the busyness, is we have to the parents have that filter of, okay, you're doing that, but you are not that. You are what God created you to be.
Right.
And we have that responsibility to nurture it, but also to put vocations on the table.
Sure.
We had a priest come through at St. John the Baptist in Folsom for just a couple of months before he was leaving for Rome for further studies. And I think he was there for about 3 months. And when the children's liturgy came up and he would bless them, he would talk to them just for a few sentences. Some of you may be a priest or a nun. Just pay attention. Mm-hmm. Your parents, talk to your parents about it. Very simply, when he left at the end of those couple of months, 5 families told him that their children were talking about
it. Wow.
That's all he did, not yep. some big. He just brought it on to there so they understood what they were
sure.
feeling, so to speak. And so that I would offer that we as parents, that's an opportunity for us, that we, as like gas prices go up and other things, we don't want to get caught in a new kind of busyness. Yes, that's there. But like you said, when you were saying earlier, that's external. But what's going on in the family? We have to pay attention to what God created you to be, and then nurture that and provide opportunity for you to understand what's going on,
right.
and so on.
Yeah, it's. I think one of the most important things you can tell your kids is, well, first of all, the most important thing is that they know when you're telling them things that you believe it, that you're not just, okay, I'm supposed to be a good parent, so I'm going to...
Oh, man, they can tell the difference.
Yeah.
Toddlers can tell the difference.
When you mm-hmm. tell your kids that God made you, he made every molecule, every atom of you. At least they talked about how he knows, can number the hairs on
right.
your head. You know, a little easier for him with me. And, you know, but that he could... He
knows you that well.
He knows you that well.
Right.
And he made you for a purpose. You specifically, mm-hmm. whether you're getting C's and D's in school, whether you're hitting home mm-hmm. runs in Little League or striking out every time, no matter what, he made you for a specific purpose. And so be proud. Don't be arrogant, but be proud. Mm-hmm. And know you have a mission on this earth. And it's as important as the President of the United States, as the Pope, as
yes.
mom and dad, as the next door neighbor who's got a 4.0 and is going
right.
to Harvard. Your mission is just as important as it. They have a mission too, and it's
right.
important. But you have a mission, and it's just as important in God's eyes. You know, but they have to know that you believe that you're mm-hmm. not just trying to pump them up.
Right.
That you believe that.
And I think with the chaos and with so many options on the table, and like you can be truly anything. You can get in the internet. That's almost a downside of the internet a little bit, is that we can have too much information
yeah.
and too many choices. But basically, it all comes down to, what did God create you to be? Let's talk about it, because there's really only so many types of that. There's the sciences, there's the liberal arts, and it's a combination. There's mm-hmm. only so many ways of general being very broad brushed in about it and how we look at it. But in Proverbs 15:22, plans fail when there is no counsel, but they succeed when advisors are many.
Hmm.
So exactly what we're talking about. When we talk to them about it, when we encourage them, when we believe it, and then when we put it out there to them, and it sounds so simple, but we're because of the chaos, it's almost like dust in our eyes. There's so much going on that we're losing track of that. And when I work with kids, and when they get really discouraged by it, because there's so much to catch up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just to remind them, to pull them back and say, wait, God knew you were going to go through this.
Yeah.
And he has this planned, and I'm here, and your parents are doing this. And there's all these pieces, and we have to look long term. But knowing that he has a plan for you, and that we were made for these times, right?
Yeah, a plan no matter. I mean, it's sort of like, well, everything changed when that happened, when I broke my leg, or when COVID mm-hmm. came, or when, things changed, but your mission didn't change.
Well said. Yes, that's it. And it may have been part of your mission to have gone through this.
Exactly. Exactly.
Right. And for parents, too, to come back to the center, so to speak, and what's really important, what matters most. And things are getting shakier on that level.
Right.
But God is there. James 1:5. But if any of you lacks wisdom, he should ask God, who gives to all generously and ungrudgingly, and he will be given it. And we know he's always there. He responds. It sounds simple, but it's not. We have to remind ourselves because we do get caught up.
Well, there are times, I mean, most of the time when you're faced with the crossroads, and mm-hmm. as Yogi Berra says, when you come to a fork in the road, take it. But
I love your wisdom, your sage wisdom.
But, you do sometimes have, usually you know kind of which way you're leaning,
mm-hmm.
even if it's not a moral choice. Sometimes you know what's right and what's wrong, if mm-hmm. it's that. But sometimes it's not even a moral choice. Like, should I do this or should I do this? Should I go mm-hmm. to this school or should I join the Navy? You know, that
right.
kind of thing. And you kind of know which way you're leaning. But sometimes it's a coin flip. I mean, it's like you just can't decide. And mm-hmm. that's really when I just say, Lord, make happen what you want to have happen. Make it happen. Make whatever, you know.
Right.
Take me in.
Right, I'm giving it to you. Show me what to do.
Yeah, take me and turn me.
Right, right. And that's a huge thing for our kids to know that we do that and to say, pray about it. And I remember another parent barking back at me about saying, pray about it, as if it was, I was sliding it off, just sloughing it off rather, letting it go and making light of it. It's like, no, there is a plan and I'm going to the bat phone. I'm going to him and listening. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm doing. It's not a casual thing. It's saying God has a plan, and this is total chaos. And especially when I've got another student now that they don't learn how the schools teach, and they have not for the past 9 years. And so it's been a struggle the entire time. And to keep this child confident mm-hmm. and engaged in a system that doesn't teach how she learns.
Right.
And fortunately, I've had experience. I had another child like that, student rather. And he ended up going on out. We were able to get him through high school, and then the world opened up to mm-hmm. him. And he's been able to find the college career that fit for him and has had no problems since. And so but I was bringing God in the moment because I couldn't talk to him about it because I knew it wasn't in their family right. life. But God put me there so I could talk to him and encourage him. And that's what we have to do for each other.
Right.
And so I would offer that our extended family and our friends, neighbors, we never know how we're going to influence that child to keep going, keep trying. I have a neighbor whose son is God made him for the trades, which mm-hmm. we need. You know, we need those electricians and the plumbers and so on. And just having that positive attitude. You know, the president needs an electrician. This is important what you're doing. And like you were saying, everybody has that piece. And how we frame it to each other and to these children, to other people's children, I would offer that that's downplayed and we don't realize the impact we have. Going to graduation parties for my students and just hearing trying to make everything sound so grand of what the kid is going to do. And this one's doing this. And then they all chime in. It's like, wow, and if that's where God leads them, that's great, and whatever I can do to support them. But it is something that we have to work on as parents. We have to frame it for them, because when there's a change, that's when it's the parents, their attitude, their approach matters. And what you said, the parents, we have to believe it.
Yeah, we do have to believe it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting how, and it's unfortunate, I guess, in some ways, but, you know, a kid early on will show a tendency towards something, whether it's athletics or academics or mm-hmm. music or acting or whatever it is,
mm-hmm.
you know, and you go, wow, you know, get them music lessons or let's
right.
send them to summer baseball camp or, you
yes.
know, that kind of stuff. And very, 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 very frequently, by the time they're 15, it's in the past. It's like it
right.
It didn't take.
Right.
Or some of them have stuck with it and really don't like it. Mm-hmm. But the expectation, you are a great baseball player. You know,
right.
We've sent you to summer camp every year.
You've been playing soccer since you were four. Just exactly. 3 more years and then you can.
Yeah.
And the kid's like, I'm so done with this.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. And culturally, we have created that.
And,
I know.
And sometimes it's music. Sometimes it's anything where it initially, even the best of parents, you know, are not, you know, I don't want to force them. I don't want to do anything like that. But it's you invest in this. You try to encourage it. Mm-hmm. They seem to have a flair for art or something. And you want to encourage those things that make mm-hmm. them happy and you think will make them happy. But then you've got to be able to back off when it wanes.
Right.
You know, that we're not trying to channel it. I mean, I had a guest the other day who was, she's a writer and she's talking about, she's been in the Herald, but she's a national writer. And she was talking about the teenage years and then when the kid's getting ready to go off, you know, whether it's to college or something else. And she said, personally, I have three kids and they're all so different in the mm-hmm. who they are and in their interests. And I said to her, congratulations. Because if they're all three different and they're pretty close in age, it means you didn't just kind of pigeonhole them into something.
We all do soccer. We all do swimming.
Yeah.
Right. Right. Wow, that is. And it takes a lot of attention as a parent to acknowledge that they are different coming in and watching them and what they're doing.
Yeah, and everybody's, quote, success is going to be measured completely differently, mm-hmm. you know, in terms of their abilities, but also in terms of just what turns them on. You know, I mean, it's
where their passion is, so to speak.
It's so different, mm-hmm. you know, that dad and mom can be interested in various things and have a passion for things, and none of the kids pick up on it at all.
Right.
You know?
Yes.
And you think just basic exposure, they would, mm-hmm. but they just...
And that's part of the, how would you say, the surrender of being a parent is understanding you may have one or none that picks up your passion.
Yeah.
And that's part of that we are God's heart and hands. It is a job, if you will, that we are doing as parents. And so talking also about saints and how parents have affected saints. St. Catherine Drexel, she grew up watching her father pray for 30 minutes each evening, and her stepmother, because her mother died shortly after she was born, opened their doors once a week to care for the poor. And this is her parents just lived their faith. This is just what they did.
An American saint, no less.
Yes.
As you were saying.
Yes.
Jane, we need to take a quick break here. We're with Jane Lee, God's Heart and Hands Ministry. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour.
This is Bishop William K. Wiegand, the Bishop Emeritus of Sacramento, and you're listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Denning.
Thank you, Bishop Wiegand, for all you have done and continue to do here in the Diocese of Sacramento and for the Universal Church. He, of course, was the Bishop of Salt Lake, which was the entire state of Utah. I remember being at his retirement and, 10, 12, 15 years ago, 14 years ago probably, and a whole bunch of people came all the way from Salt Lake City to be there, and a lot of them from the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Oh my.
Because they so respected him.
Wow.
Yeah, that was a beautiful evening. Yeah.
Wow, that's a great story.
Yeah, we are with Jane Lee, God's Heart and Hand Ministry.
Mm-hmm. Talking about saints and your children that may be saints,
yeah,
and we have a responsibility to foster it, but also not get in the way, and to have it be part of the conversation of CEO, coach, electrician, the priesthood, being a nun, and then that's important, because just looking at like Pope John Paul II. And he said, my father was a deeply religious man. His example was, in a way, my first seminary, a kind of domestic seminary. What a beautiful term. We talk about the domestic church. But he opened up a new avenue by calling it his home, a domestic seminary.
That's interesting. Well, and it's like what I was saying earlier about it's so important that the kids know when you're telling them they had a mission from God, that you believe that. You're not just telling them that to kind of get them over a hard spot or something.
Right.
You believe it, and it's the same thing as when Saint John Paul II says his dad was like a domestic seminary. It's living by example.
Mm-hmm.
If your kids think, okay, well, we're just gonna go to mass till you get confirmed or whatever,
right,
and then you guys are on your own, you do your own thing, and not important one way or the other. It's just a rite of passage kind of thing,
right?
Like graduating from high school or going to the senior ball or whatever, and that you don't really believe it, but it's just kind of in our tradition. We're Catholic in name, and we see that a lot, if they see you day in and day out, whether it's prayer, whether it's praying the rosary, whether it's talking about things in a religious sense, about how to solve problems and those things, and making frequent mention of God. I'll pray for you when you're taking that math exam. And meaning, it's not just thoughts and prayers.
I'm
actually going to pray for you.
Mm-hmm.
That they know that you believe it, because I know for sure that my kids respect my wife and me. They respect us, not because we're their elders, but they know we care greatly about them, that they are the most important things in our life, and that we truly only want the best for them.
Right.
And they know that in their heart.
Uh-huh.
And so if they see that we really believe in God, and we believe in Christ, and we believe in the crucifixion, and we believe in the Eucharist, that is the body and blood of Christ, we believe these things, it has a much better chance that they're going to believe them too, because they respect you.
Right.
They respect that, well, Dad's not an idiot, Mom's not an idiot,
Right.
They really believe this.
Mm-hmm. And it almost can't be taught with words. It has to be through actions.
It has to be lived.
Right. Yeah. What do they say? I can't hear what you're saying because what you're doing speaks so loudly.
Right.
And there's no other way to do it except by living it. And even if you walked through it, but you're just your feet are in it, not your head and your heart, they're going to know.
Well, it's like, the old picture's worth a thousand words. how many words is an eye roll worth, or a raised eyebrow, or a chagrin, mm-hmm. You know, a slumped shoulder.
Right.
Those are worth a million words.
Yes, yes, that's true. That's true. And so with this, everything that's going on in the last couple of years and whatever the future holds, we know that God is there for us. But I would offer that for our children to handle the difficulties, whatever may come in their life, we have to go through the difficulties. And that was a huge realization for me as a parent. Wow, for them to encounter whatever may happen in their lives, when they get to a certain age, they're going to have to understand and know how I handled my difficulties. And if I handle it with a remote and a scotch and that's the way I'm going to do it, or distraction or numbing or just not handling it,
right.
Or if I'm going to be open and honest and admit this is difficult, but God's going to get us through it. And then also, I make a point of talking about what I call the God stories, mm-hmm. where God showed up, where I saw mm-hmm. God, even though God shows up all the time, where I saw him, where I needed something. And we laugh because I'll say, I will pray, Lord, I need a couple extra students. Mm-hmm. And I will have two phone calls with new clients by the end of the day. And so I will share that story with them. And how, just like, I don't know what to do about this, or how this is going to go, or what should I do next? I'm at a crossroads. I'm at a fork in the road, and I want to take it. I'm not sure which side to take, but then praying about it and letting him, and so involving them, showing how God is in my thought process, and how it's just a natural way of life.
Right.
And saying to them when they were going through those turbulent teenage years and its situation, well, I'm going to pray about it, and so. Not knowing what they were going to handle in their life, I felt like I had to make sure that I was just open and honest of really how God was in my life. Who knows if they'll pick it up, if they'll go back when things get difficult for them in another 30 years, and then what will they take moving forward? And St. Maximilian Kolbe, his mother recited the Angelus, the Rosary, and the Litany to Our Lady every day. And look, that was her.
That explains it. I'm telling you, when you talk about the lives of the saints, and people say, sometimes I think their lives were so extraordinary that it's almost
like it was paved.
It's
for
almost
them.
Intimidating, you
right.
know, how holy they were. And he's one that I always come back to and go, could I have done that? Could I have done what he did? It's pretty unbelievable.
Right, but we don't jump to it. It was a process over time.
Yeah.
It was a process. So his parents did what they had their faith life.
Right.
And then who knows? We honestly don't know moving forward. And then how many of the saints came from huge families? Saint Catherine of Siena, she was one of 22 children. And then Saint Ignatius of Loyola was the last of 13 children. And that poverty is not an obstacle to holiness, because St. Padre Pio was the second out of five in a very poor but yet religious family. And St. Faustina was number 3 out of 10. And so as we move forward and understand that God puts saints in everywhere, in every shape, in every size, and we have a responsibility as parents to nurture that and to make space for that. And so what we may think is a pruning of God shutting down parts of our life, that he has to prune in order for there to be air to come into a new situation. So there's more family time. So we have the time for the drive in the country.
You don't get blossoms if you don't prune.
True.
You don't.
True. And if you don't have fertilizer,
I would say. That's true. Jane, always a joy. Always
Thank
a pleasure.
You. It's great to be
God's
here. Thank
Heart
you.
And Hands Ministry, Jane Lee. Thanks for listening, everyone. God bless. We'll talk to you again soon. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the Mercy Foundation, enriching lives in the Sacramento region through Sisters of Mercy ministries in healthcare, education, housing, and the care for the poor and elderly. For the Mercy Foundation, philanthropy is one of the most powerful expressions of compassion and love. Just as many people in our community need a hand, countless others are reaching out to them with comfort and hope. You can express your care and concern for the less fortunate with a gift to the Mercy Foundation. You can give them a call, 916-851-2700. That's 916-851-2700. And you can be confident that fully 100% of your contribution will support the Sisters of Ministry of Mercy Ministry or ministries that you choose. And what a wonderful treasure Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts has been for all of us here in the diocese as they transition into new ownership and management. They continue to offer wonderful workshops, wonderful resources for the Catholic community throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Not only does Easter's provide a wide array of Catholic books, both current releases and longtime classics, but they also sponsor a number of valuable workshops and lectures throughout the year. They're located at 6916 Sunrise Boulevard in Citrus Heights. Give them a call, 916-338-7272. We also receive a generous underwriting support by Crumley & Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. If you have questions about retirement, Crumley & Associates can help you with their confident retirement approach that can help define a clear roadmap to get you where you want to go. You can contact them, get all the details at Crumley & Associates, 7956 California Avenue in Fair Oaks. They're at 916-638-4600. That's 916-638-4600. And we are certainly appreciative of the fine and longstanding support of the Mercy Foundation, of Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts, and of Crumley and Associates. We'd like to thank all the wonderful people and organizations, businesses in town and throughout the Diocese of Sacramento who have provided underwriting for the Bishop's Hour, some in the last few years, some have been with us for a very long time. If you would like to be an underwriter for the Bishop's Radio Hour, it's a wonderful opportunity to support this mission and also to support the diocese and also to get some recognition for your organization or for your business. The easiest way to do this is to give us a shout, send us an email, radio@scd.org, and we can give you all the details about helping to underwrite the Bishop's Radio Hour. Again, that's radio@scd.org.
Standing. refuge in the storm.